This is Jim Inkster. Coming today on the show, we'll visit with former state lawmaker Melissa Flournoy. She now heads Planned Parenthood in this state, and we'll talk about the Louisiana legislature and its assault on her organization in the past session. And also in Texas, they continue, lawmakers do, continue to deliberate over the sensitive issue of abortion. And Bobby Jindal, our governor, vetoed a surrogate motherhood bill in Louisiana that passed the legislature. We'll talk about this and more with Melissa Flournoy. Also, Paul Offit, an American pediatrician specializing in infectious diseases and an expert on vaccines, immunology, and virology. He was featured in the science section of the New York Times yesterday, and he has some concerns about alternative medicine. In the book he has written, Do You Believe in Magic? We'll talk with him as well, but first the news. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. J.C. Kane is producing, 297-5633, your number outside this area. It is 877-217-5757, a toll-free dial, and you may reach us by email, inkstershow@wrkf.org. Melissa Flournoy, former state lawmaker, recently the head of Louisiana Progress, and now the state director for Planned Parenthood. Good morning, Melissa Flournoy.
Well, good morning, Jim. It's great to be on the show. Hope you're enjoying this wonderful weather.
Yes, indeed. And I know you're, you're joining us from the beautiful city of New Orleans.
I am indeed. I'm getting ready to go to the free clinic that's put on by the Free Clinic Association in coordination with MSNBC down here in New Orleans at the Convention Center. And there really are some amazing healthcare needs in our state, and I'm just really excited to see the number of volunteer physicians and nurses and other volunteers that are coming out to help with the free clinic today.
Why did you take this gig?
Well, you know, I've been very interested in these issues for a long time. I actually, when I was in the legislature back in the early 90s, one of the issues that I was very interested in was teen pregnancy. And I actually started trying to pass comprehensive sex education legislation back in 1992. And, you know, here it is 2013, and Pat Smith is still trying to pass comprehensive health education and sex education, and we just hadn't made very much progress. We've still got bad numbers on teen pregnancy and HIV/AIDS and everything else, and it just felt like the right thing for me to do. It's an issue that I care about, and I really do think that we've got to talk about our real issues in Louisiana, Jim. We've got real problems with access to health care, and we've got real problems with for women getting the birth control and addressing teen pregnancy. And, you know, back in 1992, I was chairman of the State AIDS Commission, and I'm just blown away by the fact that in 2013, we have the highest rate of HIV infection in the country, you know, in New Orleans and Baton Rouge. So it just felt like the right thing to do. It's a great organization, and it's issues that I care about.
Well, last month at the state capitol, the full Louisiana House, on a vote that was 90 to 4, urged the State Department of Health and Hospitals to immediately suspend all grants and reimbursements, $1 million a year, pursuant to its medical provider agreement with Planned Parenthood Gulf Coast. Your thoughts?
Oh, gosh. You know, it's interesting to see how Planned Parenthood nationally has become a political football organization. And what's so amazing is that, you know, Marcia Shuler just did a story a couple of weeks ago after the session basically saying that Planned Parenthood is in good standing with the Department of Health and Hospitals. We're a trusted health care provider. And I just think all that's just politically motivated theater to be part of a national agenda that's really being pushed by outside groups. And so it's really frustrating, and I hate to see that so many of our lawmakers are just sort of falling in line with this right-wing extreme agenda.
297-5633, inkstershow@wrkf.org. Anna in Gonzales asks about Senate Bill 90. I think that's the Frank Hoffman legislature?
No, Senate Bill 90 is Fred Mills' bill, and it really was, I think, intended to limit access to abortion through telemedicine. One of the things we're seeing that a lot of universities are pushing these days and a lot of the healthcare providers is how to provide access to healthcare in rural areas and underserved areas. And, you know, gosh, this has been a conversation that's been going on in Louisiana for over 20 years. I remember when LSU and Shreveport at the Med Center first started talking about telemedicine as a way to address the unmet needs out in the rural areas. But what this bill intended to do was to eliminate access to abortion via telemedicine. And I don't think anybody in Louisiana is doing abortions via telemedicine, and so, you know, I don't think it'll have really much of an effect.
Well, I know it passed overwhelmingly. I'm looking
at it definitely passed. It definitely passed.
98-3 in the House. You said it's political football, but some would say you're a political punching bag, Melissa.
Well, you know, I never shy away from a fight, Jim, and what can I say? Somebody called me the patron saint of lost causes last week. But, you know, I feel like we've got to be clear about what are the health care needs in Louisiana. And if Planned Parenthood needs to be the punching bag, you know, I think what we've proven around the country is that we'll take a punch and stand back up. And so, you know, I'm just very impressed by the level of support Planned Parenthood has in Louisiana and around the country. And I think it's a very high-quality organization because we really are trying to talk about health care. And folks want to talk about abortion, but we really need to talk about health care, Jim. I mean, we've got the highest STD rates in the country. You know, it's just astonishing. We've got the highest gonorrhea rates and syphilis rates in Caddo Parish. You know, New Orleans has got, and Baton Rouge have the highest HIV rates and new infection rates. I mean, the data is just staggering. So we really need to talk about access to health care and sort of what are the real-life issues. And frankly, Planned Parenthood is a health care provider. You know, we've been in Baton Rouge for 20 years and in New Orleans for 30 years, and we see a lot of men and women to provide, you know, and maybe the only physician that are the only health care professionals that they see.
Well, why do you think you can only get 3 or 4 votes in the House of Representatives? Obviously, a lot of Democrats, your party, most members of your party are voting against Planned Parenthood.
Well, I don't think we've really built a good base of folks that understand what we do and who we are. And so, you know, I came on board at the end of February, and I think part of the challenge that I've accepted is how to communicate who Planned Parenthood is and what we do. And you know, frankly, I think it's sort of nationally popular right now to be against Planned Parenthood. So clearly we have a lot of work to do, you know, educating our elected officials and the public, you know, about the health care needs in the state and about the work of Planned Parenthood. So we definitely have our work cut out for us.
Well, today in Austin, Texas, Republicans in the legislature in the Lone Star State voted to move forward with new abortion restrictions after limiting testimony at a public hearing, refusing to consider Democratic amendments, and imposing strict security precautions to prevent disruptions from protesting abortion rights supporters. On a party-line vote, the Republican majority sent the bill to the full House for a vote next week. Governor Rick Perry is pushing his allies in the legislature to move quickly after he called lawmakers back for a second special session to pass the bill, which would limit when, where, and how women may obtain an abortion in the state of Texas. More than 3,500 people came to the Capitol and registered a position on the bill. More than 1,000 signed up to testify, but fewer than 100 people had a chance to express their views. But this is an issue 40 years after Roe v. Wade that is permeating big time in Texas. What's going on in our neighboring state, Melissa?
Well, I think a lot of it might be driven by Rick Perry's political ambitions. I mean, I think he's taking a stand on abortion to help drive his national brand as an extremist right-wing politician, because I think he really does want to run for president.
Well, he already did that, and it didn't work out very well.
Well, you know, I think he's eternally optimistic. The good news is that there are a whole lot of women and men in the state of Texas that understand what's at stake. I think they had you know, 6,000 or 7,000 folks on the steps of the Capitol in Austin on Monday. As you mentioned, they had 1,200 sign in to testify yesterday on the legislation. And frankly, as a former legislator, I think we've got to let the people talk. You know, I'm very concerned and very frustrated by how the leadership in the Texas legislature has limited debate, excluded people from the process, basically locked down the Capitol. It's almost like what the Jindal administration did with the teachers last year, you know, sort of packing the rooms, not letting people talk, locking the Capitol. And frankly, that's very undemocratic and un-American. I actually wish they'd had hearings for, you know, all this week, 3 or 4 days of testimony, and let everybody talk who wanted to talk. You know, I think that's what the political process needs to be about. You know, frankly, this is just sort of heavy-handedness on the part of the leadership in Texas to limit discussion and limit citizen input. And I think it's a bad precedent to set.
Well, the bill that is under debate in Texas, House Bill 2, would ban abortions after 20 weeks of pregnancy, require that the procedure be performed at ambulatory surgical centers, mandate that doctors who perform abortions obtain admitting privileges at a hospital within 30 miles, and even non-surgical abortions take place in a surgical center, and only 5 of 42 clinics operating in Texas qualify as ambulatory surgical centers. They're all in major metropolitan areas. That brings us to a question from Holly. How many places in Louisiana offer abortion services? How many locations are there? Do you know, Melissa?
Well, you know, Planned Parenthood is not an abortion provider in Louisiana, and I think at one point there might have been about 7 clinics around the state that provided abortion. And I was in a conversation yesterday trying to get that number, and I think we may be down to 4 in Louisiana. I think there's a clinic in Shreveport, 1 in Baton Rouge, 1 in Jefferson Parish, and 1 in Orleans Parish. And that's sort of my best information that I could get yesterday. I think a few clinics have closed in the last several months, and so I think that the, you know, access to health care, access to abortion care is an issue now in Louisiana as well as Texas. Now, I will tell you that I was very impressed by the commentary from the Texas Hospital Association yesterday in Texas. I saw a brief clip of that. And the lobbyists from the Texas Hospital Association talked about how this admitting privileges requirement was completely unnecessary and inappropriate. And if there was an emergency need for someone receiving an abortion somewhere in the state of Texas, that that person would be transported to the emergency room. And so there was no need for a physician being involved as an abortion provider to have admitting privileges, and that clearly was just an effort to limit access and limit the number of physicians who were able to provide care in Texas. And one of the things the Hospital Association talked about was how that would create an unconstitutional barrier. And so it feels like, you know, Texas is willing to pass a law that they know is going to be challenged in court and is unconstitutional.
Well, I think some of the supporters would acknowledge and agree with you that this is designed to curtail abortions in Texas, and quite likely other states will follow with similar legislation.
It's what's fascinating to me is that this is the conversation that seems to be happening in Wisconsin, Ohio, Virginia, Alabama, Texas, and Louisiana, all states with Republican governors and Republican legislators. And you know, it's interesting to me that these guys are not talking about prevention. If you don't want people to have abortions, let's talk about health care. Let's talk about sex education. Let's talk about access to contraception and family planning. You know, Dr. Julie Finger, who's on the faculty at Tulane, participated in one of our events, and one of her quotes was just great. If you don't want people in Louisiana to have abortion, fund Planned Parenthood, because we really do need to focus on access to health care and prevention. And frankly, we need to go one step further, Jim. I mean, it's been sort of the cause of my life to talk about real life issues for young people.
All right, we'll go to the phone lines with Melissa Flournoy, former state lawmaker, now head of Planned Parenthood in Louisiana. 297-5633 is your number outside the area. It is 877-217-5757. Back after this 90-second pause on WRKF. This is Jim Engster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge, 877-217-5757, your number wherever you may be. And if you're dialing locally, it's 297-5633. Dan downtown. Dan, you're on the air with Melissa Flournoy, who is State Director for Planned Parenthood.
Yeah, so does it seem a bit hypocritical that the same politicians that are so adamant about limiting a woman's right to choose would not vote even 1 cent in taxes to ensure adequate educational and health services for the children who are born?
Amen, Dan. I testified a couple years ago at the Capitol on a bill about limiting abortion, and I said in Louisiana, life begins at conception and ends at birth, because we really don't want to fund access to health care. We don't want to fund prenatal care. We don't want to fund the nurse-family partnership and interventions that will help young women and women in poverty to raise healthy children. We don't want to fund subsidized care, daycare. We don't want to expand Medicaid to improve the health of Louisiana citizens. There's this unnatural fascination about abortion when we really need to be talking about how to have healthy kids and how to help women and men prevent unwanted pregnancies. If you want to limit abortion, let's talk about prevention and health care. And Jim, right before the break, I wanted to talk about sex ed. And Pat Smith has passed a resolution to create a commission or task force to study the implementation for sex education in Louisiana. And that's a great first step. We've just got to really deal with the real world. And we also have to find a way to help talk to parents to have conversations with their kids about sexual activity. It just seems like more and more young people are becoming sexually active earlier and earlier.
All right, Trudy on Lee Drive. Trudy, you're on with Melissa Flournoy. Hi, Trudy. Trudy.
Oh, yes, here's Trudy. Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I have heard some people suggest that due to the decline predicted in the white population in our country, that many of the power structure males, that is the what we call the white Anglo-Saxon Protestant power, are fearful that they're losing population and using abortion as a way to try to get more white women to be stay in the kitchen and in the bedroom and produce more children.
All right. Melissa, you want to take that one?
Well, Trudy, I can't speak to what's in the hearts and minds of some of these politicians around the country, but, you know, you may have nailed it.
297-5633 for Melissa Flournoy, State Director of Planned Parenthood. Question from Edwin. Why does the governor oppose medically necessary abortions but cuts aid to the disabled? That's from Edwin.
Oh, that's an excellent question. That's an excellent question. I mean, one of the things that I think that we are seeing is that the folks that have abortions after 20 weeks are usually recommended by neonatologists and specialists because of some type of fetal abnormality. And so, you know, the problem I think Edwin is raising is that we're actually forcing people, the women, to have children that may have remarkably severely medical problems that then we don't want to help support them after the children are born. And I feel like we've got a moral obligation to the disabled in Louisiana, and it's just unbelievable that Governor Jindal has vetoed the funding for the disabled, funding for health care. There's a 10-year waiting list for the NOW waiver. We have so many families in Louisiana, and God bless them for their struggles every day, raising children that are medically compromised and have a lot of issues. And I just admire those parents so much. And so it just seems completely contradictory that we're not funding those services as well.
Alicia writes, I'm sick to death of a woman's health care policies in this state and across the country being decided by, she writes, GOP ideals that mirror the mullahs in Afghanistan. America needs to separate church and state on this issue. No woman wants to have an abortion, and cutting Planned Parenthood cuts access to birth control. That from Alicia, probably preaching to the choir, but your thoughts, Melissa Flournoy.
Well, I agree. I actually think that having politicians making health care decisions for women is bad on so many levels. And we really need to talk about access to health care, access to family planning, access to diabetes care and health management. I mean, Planned Parenthood does a number of different health care things. We provide life-saving cancer screenings. You know, women, this may be the only place women come for health care. So cervical cancer, breast cancer, all of that. And this sort of attack on Planned Parenthood really is an attack on access to health care. And it really is, unbelievable that, you know, a few politicians feel like they have the right to, jeopardize the health care of the whole state. And that's true on the Medicaid expansion issue, too, Jim. I'm just really am struggling with the idea that Louisiana is going to walk away from the expansion of Medicaid that could provide health services for 400,000 uninsured people. And, we're just making some bad decisions in Louisiana right now that are going to affect the long-term health of our citizens. It's very frustrating.
297-5633. It's still time to talk with Melissa Flournoy, State Director for Planned Parenthood. Ralph near LSU. Hi, Ralph. You're on with Melissa.
Hi, Melissa. Thanks, Jim. What I would like to ask you to do is address the comments you made about the levels of STDs in Louisiana, and to put the, make a link between sex education in schools and maybe address the stigma of the idea where guys don't want to know that they have STDs such as HIV, gonorrhea, and the like.
Well, thank you for your call, Ralph. I mean, Louisiana ranks in the top three states with the highest rates of chlamydia, gonorrhea, and syphilis. You know, it's syphilis, 2013. It's just amazing. You know, we rank in the top 10 with people living with HIV infection among adults and adolescents. The fastest growing group of folks that are HIV infection are African-American women. We have 20% of our citizens lack health insurance. And these are people who are working. It's just ridiculous. So the piece of this is that we've got cultural issues we've got to deal with. We need to talk about contraception. We need to talk about safe sex. One of the things Planned Parenthood does is we do HIV testing in both Baton Rouge and New Orleans. We work with other HIV providers and coalitions. You know, part of it is how do you get the word out to encourage people to get yourself tested and to really focus on your own health care. And part of the challenge, I think, is also targeted towards young men. We really need to get young men to be more sexually responsible and to use condoms to reduce the spread of sexually transmitted illnesses. You know, and so part of that is really trying to change the expectations and behavior of young people. And really that's why I think comprehensive health education is so important, because kids need to know what's at stake. You know, you get these illnesses and you've got them for an awfully long time. HIV is a lifetime of health management issues. And, you know, these are just real challenges that we have to talk about in a very straightforward way.
All right. 297-5633, your number, and we'll go back to the phone lines. Here's an email from Ryan, who makes the observation, Melissa, that one way to reduce the number of abortions would be to promote more same-sex unions.
Okay, well, there you go. Who knows? I'm not going to touch that one.
No? Well, it would make sense, wouldn't it? As far as reducing the number of abortions.
Well,
Not to say you're promoting or anybody's promoting that sort of thing, but there would be fewer abortions if there were more same-sex unions. Lynn and Melrose. Lynn, good morning.
Good morning, Jim and Melissa. Congratulations on your new position, and good luck with the health fair in New Orleans. And I just want to say, you go, girl.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. You know, I think there are a lot of people in Louisiana that are sane, that are educated, and that understand sort of what's at stake around health care, Jim. And unfortunately, it's loud people who are poorly informed that have been sort of dominating the airwaves. And so, you know, my message is for people of goodwill to sort of stand up and to be involved and be engaged in health care and in politics and in community conversations at their churches, at their schools, and in their neighborhoods, that we need to promote better access to health care, and we need to have a healthy Louisiana. And talking about these issues is really important.
From a political standpoint, outside the South, if Roe v. Wade were suddenly overturned, and right now there are probably 4 votes on the Supreme Court to do it, but if it were overturned after 40 years, this would be an incredible political bonanza for the Democratic Party. I would think Democrats would be winning big time in places where they ordinarily don't because of the outcry over a right that's been in place for 40 years that was taken away. What do you think about the politics of this issue outside Louisiana and other southern states?
Well, I really do believe that we have got to, you know, protect access to health care. And frankly, I'm just very concerned about the tone of the debate around the country. And I don't know what the implications are if Roe v. Wade were overturned politically, but I will tell you that the implications for families would be bad. And women of wealth and access will always be able to have abortions at their private gynecologist, or they'll travel outside the country. You know, the people who are most limited by this are folks that don't have insurance and don't have resources and don't have access to health care. And you know, I just really feel like we've got to continue to focus on Medicaid expansion, access to health care, education, and prevention. And frankly, I don't want to consider the implications, political or otherwise, if we turn back the clock. You know, I'm 50 years old, but I have talked to women who are old enough and told me stories about women who've had back alley abortions. One of the reasons that I am so supportive of this is that, you know, women in the 60s and before did not have access to health care. They were butchered by back alley abortions. So many young people have no recollection of the past, and we cannot go back to that. We need high-quality health care, but we all need to focus on prevention if we care about reducing the number of abortions. There's a lot we can agree on if we choose to.
Did want to ask you about Governor Jindal's veto of Senator Gary Smith's Senate Bill 162, which would have allowed surrogate motherhood in Louisiana. What did you make of the governor vetoing this measure?
Well, you know, I think that that particular bill had a lot of problems in it. I do think that, and surrogacy is a hot-button issue that I don't know enough about to really comment on the merits of that, but I do think that that infertile couples like Gary and his wife really do want children. They were able to have children by going with a surrogate. That probably does need to be regulated in some fashion. And I actually hope that Louisiana can sort of review what's in the best interest of families and move forward with that. But, you know, I understand that folks sort of across the political spectrum had issues with the surrogacy bill. But I hope that that will be an issue that we can discuss thoughtfully and logically moving forward.
Silas writes, can Melissa explain why so many Republican voters see no contradiction in objecting to certain provisions of the federal health care law for religious reasons, contraception, and then being so willing to use government to force their religious beliefs on others who don't agree with them on abortion? And I must say that in this state and in others, but particularly in this state, I don't know that this is a party issue. As I said, Planned Parenthood only got 3 votes in the Louisiana House on one bill and 4 on another, and there are a lot of Democrats who are voting in lockstep with Republicans. But what's your take on Silas's question?
Well, I think there are some inherent contradictions in political philosophy, and, you know, it's... logic and facts don't seem to matter when it comes to ideology, and so I think we've really got to talk about logic and facts more effectively. I think he's right. There are some inherent contradictions.
Well, Melissa, congratulations on your new position, and we look forward to talking with you again very soon.
Well, thanks, Jim. I appreciate your time today. And I just want people to understand what's at stake in Louisiana around access to health care. And Planned Parenthood is a trusted health care provider in New Orleans and in Baton Rouge. And I hope folks understand sort of our mission really is about prevention and about access to health care.
Right.
So thanks for the opportunity.
Thank you, Melissa Flournoy.
Take care. Okay, bye-bye.
Our guest now is Dr. Paul Offit, an American pediatrician specializing in infectious diseases, an expert on vaccines, immunology, and virology, and he was featured yesterday in the New York Times Science section. His latest work is Do You Believe in Magic? The Sense and the Nonsense of Alternative Medicine. Good morning, Dr. Offit.
Good morning.
Dr. Offit, by the way, is chief of the Division of Infectious Diseases and director of the Vaccine Education Center at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, and he's written another book that was well-received, Autism's False Prophets, Vaccinated was another, and Deadly Choices. So, Dr. Offit, what about alternative medicine? Is there any good alternative medicine?
Definitely. I think there are many things in alternative medicine that are valuable. I think the trick is knowing what they are and making sure that you don't get hoodwinked into the things that are just largely based on false claims.
Well, the feeling among many is that there are ways to... address illnesses that maybe are not conventional that work, but more often than not, my impression from you is that you believe that a lot of this is hocus pocus and not effective in treating illness.
Well, I certainly think there are times when alternative medicine crosses the line into quackery. I think one is when you choose an alternative remedy instead of something that really could work. I mean, for example, saw palmetto is promoted as being able to shrink prostates of men who have enlarged prostates when they're over 50. That's not true. It doesn't do that. And there are conventional therapies that can shrink prostates and avoid the problems that come with prostatic enlargement. So, or, for example, you know, garlic has been promoted as a way, these concentrated garlic extracts, of lowering sort of bad cholesterol, so-called low-density lipoprotein cholesterol. That doesn't work either. So, I mean, if high cholesterol is a problem, there are medicines that can lower cholesterol. So you have to be careful. So number one is don't take don't avoid conventional medicines that can work in favor of some of these alternative medicines which have been proven not to work. Secondly, is, you know, don't assume that all alternative therapies, especially these dietary supplements, are without harm. Sometimes they can have serious side effects, and because anything that has a positive effect can have a negative effect.
We'll be back with Dr. Paul Offit. His book, Do You Believe in Magic? The Sense and Nonsense of Alternative Medicine, will return in 90 seconds. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. Dr. Paul Offit is our guest. Do you believe in magic, the sense and nonsense of alternative medicine? Dr. Offit's book is getting incredible attention across the country, and he is one who says put the brakes on how you view alternative medicine. Some work, but many of these... methods do not work. Philip in Ponchatoula. Philip, you're on the air with Dr. Offit.
I would like to know what the doctor thinks of chiropractors who sell supplements, and specifically if it's hocus-pocus when a chiropractor has your balance restored by putting a container of the whatever supplement you're short on.
All right. What about chiropractors and the things they do to address people's issues?
So chiropractic was founded in the late 1800s and based on the belief that all diseases are associated with misaligned spinal columns. That's not true. Not all diseases are associated with misaligned spinal columns. And I think chiropractors, when they deal with musculoskeletal problems, are fine. I think that you have to be very careful, though, about anybody who recommends something that they also happen to sell out of their office. I think that should raise warning flags.
You give a nod to four. One, two, three, four of 51,000 supplements on the market. Which four are good?
So folic acid or vitamin B9 definitely should be taken by women during childbearing years to prevent delivering children who can have birth defects. That's clear. I think omega-3 fatty acids may be of value in preventing heart disease for those who don't eat at least two helpings of oily fish a week. And then vitamin D and calcium may be of benefit, although it's looking less likely that this is true for people who get older and where they can develop thinning of the bones, that this could help with that. But that really, the bloom is sort of coming off that rose. So not much, I think, you know, that which doesn't mean that the other dietary supplements don't work. It just means that for the most part, there are no studies showing that they work because it's largely an unregulated industry.
What about, this is a question from Laura, glucosamine, chondroitin, that's something I know a lot of folks who have arthritic issues take, and athletes, is that something that works?
You know, it's funny, that's what got me into this. I had surgery on my left knee. My orthopedist said, take chondroitin sulfate and glucosamine. This will help with cartilage deposition in your knee. This will help relieve the pain in your knee. And I went, there were two excellent studies, actually, that were published, one in the New England Journal of Medicine, another in the Annals of Internal Medicine, comparing chondroitin sulfate and glucosamine to just placebo, a sugar pill, and there was no difference. And so it sort of worried me that an orthopedist, we conventional therapists, had crossed the line into alternative medicine, which is to say accepting therapies for which there weren't necessarily any basis for their recommendation. It scared me. That's actually why I came to write the book.
So you're saying that's not necessarily a good thing?
Yeah, I don't think it hurts. And if it works for you and you feel that it works and you can avoid things like nonsteroidal anti-inflammatory medicines or these COX-2 inhibitors like Celebrex or Bextra, great. I think that's great because it won't hurt you. But certainly it doesn't seem to work any better than placebo. But that doesn't mean it doesn't work as placebo, which can be valuable.
Some of this stuff is expensive, glucosamine in particular.
Yeah, I found that out actually when I went to my general nutrition center and bought it. I it's what sort of launched me into this. And I think, you know, it's a $34 billion a year industry. And because it, again, as I said earlier, is not regulated, it's under really no obligation to support its claims or admit its harm. So it's really hard to find information that this stuff works. You're left with testimonials or celebrity endorsements.
We'll get to that. 297-5633 for Dr. Paul Offit. Do you believe in magic, the sense and nonsense of alternative medicine? And Dr. Offit is a chief of the Division of Infectious Diseases and director of the Vaccine Education Center at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. Celebrity endorsements, that's one of your pet peeves. People like Suzanne Summers. Tell us why.
It does surprise me that we look to celebrities like Suzanne Summers or Jenny McCarthy for healthcare advice. I mean, why is it that we imbue them with a level of expertise or experience that they don't have? I guess it's because we think we know them because we see them on the big or little screen, and I don't think it serves us well. I mean, Suzanne Summers is a perfect example. She's in the anti-aging business. It's a huge industry. She certainly financially benefits from that industry. She has her own line of products that presumably turn back the clock, and I think, you know, we should be a little more skeptical about people who really are salesmen for an industry.
Well, you're right. We think we know these people, and because we admire their work, we think they're knowledgeable about any number of things they may not be. And you note that she's certainly not the only one.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we think that, you know, that when somebody plays Chrissy on Three's Company, that gives them knowledge about how the body ages. Not necessarily true.
Well, you talk about Sissy Spacek and Marielle Hemingway and Victoria Principal, James Coburn, who died, by the way. I remember he said that MSM cured him of rheumatoid arthritis.
Right, and all those you mentioned actually were very big in the mid-1970s in promoting megavitamins, which is to say taking these large quantities of vitamins vastly in excess of the recommended daily allowance. This was in the 70s before we know what we know now, which is that those large quantities can actually increase your risk of heart disease, increase your risk of cancer, and shorten your life. So it's dangerous, and it's a danger that surprised me in the reading of this book, and a danger that's not a controversy in the scientific community, but is unknown to most people in the general public.
All right, here's a question from Michael. He asks, how do you define what is alternative medicine and what is traditional medicine?
That's a good question. I guess in general, the way I've worked it in this book is that sort of acupuncture, naturopathy, homeopathy, chiropractic, sort of these 54,000 dietary supplements on the market, megavitamins, I put that under the category of alternative medicine. But I think you could argue that there's no such thing as alternative medicine. An alternative medicine that works should just be called medicine, and if an alternative medicine doesn't work, it's not an alternative.
Well, there are people who are afflicted with cancer, maybe a terminal diagnosis, who are reaching out for any lifeline at all. Some would say it's cruel to infer that they could be cured somehow by something that is not effective. But on the other hand, hope is a powerful emotion, isn't it?
Yes, I guess that's where I have the most problem with these alternative healers is when they're willing to make a fortune off of your misfortune. Certainly there are doctors who claim to have cancer cures, and they say it's what your doctor doesn't want you to know, what the pharmaceutical company doesn't want you to know. I mean, but, you know, I work in a hospital that sees children with cancer, and you know, we have certainly children that have difficult-to-treat cancers, and we have experimental therapies that move up or down on the list based on their promise. And a lot of these cancer therapies that are offered by some of these people aren't even on the list because they've shown no evidence of promise or have frankly been disproved. And yet still people continue to take advantage of a parent's desperate desire to do anything to help their child. And I think it's just outrageous.
You point out, Dr. Offit, that these alternative methods are not new. 1930s, sulfa. What happened?
Yeah, well, I mean, certainly we've had, I mean, for cancer cures, I mean, we've had things like the dynamizer and this oscilloscope. I mean, these sort of things that have been offered, you know, by people like Albert Abrams and sort of the Gerson diet. I mean, there's been sort of a history, decades-long history, of this sort of fads to treat cancer. I think probably shark cartilage is one that people may remember. It was advertised on 60 Minutes or promoted on 60 Minutes in a story by Mike Wallace. And we go from one fad to the next. We always believe that there is that magic bullet out there, that magic remedy that's going to make this all go away. And, would that it were that easy.
Well, you note that in 1957, which is 56 years ago, a West German pharmaceutical company distributed a sedative called thalidomide, and advertisements at that time claimed it was safe, even for pregnant women, and unfortunately, that was not the case.
Yeah, and there's examples, and you had mentioned earlier, the sulfa disaster, the elixir sulfanilamide disaster, it was a sulfa preparation, an antibiotic preparation that was made badly that caused a number of children to die. In the thalidomide example, although that drug was never licensed in the United States, it still was licensed in Europe. It had never been tested in pregnant women, and when it was given to pregnant women, it was found to cause these sort of awful birth defects where hands and feet were directly attached to the body. So, you know, conventional medicines, you know, I think the history of drug regulation in America has been built on tombstones. I think we've learned as we go. And so we have, for the most part, a regulated industry that is at least obliged to admit their harms and support their claims. I think what bugs me about, I guess, the dietary supplement industry is ever since 1994 with the Dietary Supplement and Health Education Act, you know, they basically can make whatever claims they want. It's an education act that has nothing to do with education and everything to do with the consumer not knowing what they're getting.
Linus Pauling, you mentioned him more than a few times in the book. In the 1970s, he was saying vitamin C was a panacea, that it even cured cancer. What did he do as far as perhaps for causing people to get information that was not correct?
Right. Here was a brilliant man, a man who won two Nobel Prizes, the only person ever to win two unshared Nobel Prizes, who somewhere in his mid-60s just lost it. He just came to believe that large quantities of vitamin C and ultimately large quantities of many different vitamins could treat the common cold, could treat cancer, and eventually could treat a variety of illnesses, even though study after study showed that he was wrong. This brilliant man was unwilling to accept that he was wrong. I don't know why, maybe just the level of hubris, but where there's a fine line between genius and madness. But whatever it was, the weight of his voice, because he was a Nobel Prize winner, I think really gave birth to the notion that megavitamins were cure-alls, and that's clearly not true.
Donna asks Dr. Offit if taking an aspirin each day is a good thing.
Yes, again, talk to your doctor about this, whether you are someone who would benefit from that. But, you know, aspirin sort of lowers the ability of your body to clot. And for some people who are at risk of heart attacks, that can be of value. So, sure, that's the kind of thing that can certainly be of value.
$34 billion a year is the juggernaut that is involved with alternative medicine. David in Lafayette. David, you're on the air with Dr. Offit. Hi, David.
Yes, good morning, gentlemen. Real quick, with all the claims that are being made by, like the gentleman said, by these different companies, well, these different companies that sell supplements, why hasn't the FDA put stricter regulation or testing into the claims made by the different companies that sell the supplements? And is it a cost issue? And if it is a cost issue, why not have the companies that are making these claims support some of the money to verify whether or not these vitamins or supplements actually work?
David, you asked the perfect question. The answer is that in the early 1990s, the Food and Drug Administration, or FDA, did try to do exactly that, and they were turned back by a very powerful, very politically connected, very media-savvy industry that had, I think, was able to harness the voice of Orrin Hatch, especially, who's a Republican from Utah, to really not only defeat what the FDA wanted to do, but to put up a wall between the FDA and dietary supplements that's never been breached. And I think the consumer clearly is hurt by this. I think you're right. Let's you and I go to Congress and try and change things, because right now it's not in favor of the consumer.
Danielle asks your opinion of Dr. Oz.
I think Dr. Oz is a brilliant man who is a great doctor. He trained at our medical center. He trained at the University of Pennsylvania School of Medicine, so we claim some responsibility, who's trying to do the right thing and gives a lot of good advice. I think, unfortunately, he also mixes that in with some terrible advice. I mean, he has faith healers on the show who have claimed to cure cancer, or he has people getting intravenous megavitamins, which I think can only be harmful, and it's a shame. I mean, I think he wants to do the right thing, but occasionally he mixes this in with this kind of woo. And also, he employs the guru approach, which is to say he makes these statements that are often unsupported by science, but, you know, you're supposed to believe them simply because he says them. And I think that should never be true. It should never be about the person. It should always be about the data or the science.
You note in the book that even a man as smart and as rich as Steve Jobs was under the sway of alternative methods when he was battling cancer.
Right. He had a treatable tumor. It was a pancreatic tumor, but his happened to be treatable. He chose acupuncture. He chose bowel cleansings. He chose vitamin and fruit juices instead of the early surgery that would have saved his life. So, you know, sometimes you can be so smart that you're not so smart, and I think that's what happened to him. He chose an alternative therapy route that ultimately killed him.
What do you think of Deepak Chopra?
Well, again, I sort of put him in the same category as Andrew Weil and Dr. Oz, which is that they sort of employ this guru model, that they make a statement, these sort of ex cathedra statements, as if they're being handed down from on high. And they imbue, I think, and this is what I think makes alternative medicine such a draw, they imbue sort of that medicine with a spirituality that borders on mysticism, and we like that. I think we're drawn to that because conventional medicine is cold and technological and sort of heartless at some level, whereas they create this sort of general feeling that really is more spiritual. And I think Deepak Chopra probably does that more than anybody. But again, it should always be about the data, not the man.
You close with an analysis of Albert Schweitzer.
Right. I think what I loved about Albert Schweitzer, I mean, here was a God who, in the name of a physician, who in the name of Jesus went to Africa to try and bring modern medicine to Africa. And I think, you know, what he learned there in dealing with the witch doctors was that the witch doctors had their place. That these people who knew that they were dealing 80% of the time with self-limited diseases gave their, you know, the people who followed them things that wouldn't hurt them. And I think that there's a place for that. And I think, you know, placebo medicine, if you will, can be of value, especially when conventional therapists do some things that can be harmful. We give antibiotics for viral infections. We give cough and cold preparations, which can be harmful for people that are going to get better anyway. And I think Schweitzer realized that, and that, so I sort of close with that story as a parable in some ways.
The book is Do You Believe in Magic? The Sense and Nonsense of Alternative Medicine from Dr. Paul Offit. We only have a few seconds left, but Sam asked about testosterone. Is that alternative medicine?
Well, I think, again, it's you know, we should take nothing that is not regulated by the FDA without being suspicious, especially some of these Chinese herbs, which are recommended for potency, often are laced with things like sildenafil, which have Viagra in it, so be careful.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Offit. Pleasure talking with you, and congrats on another provocative book, Do You Believe in Magic? Take care,
my friend.
Have a good holiday.
You too.
And we'll be back tomorrow on the 4th of July with another show. And hope you have a good holiday and spend some time with us tomorrow. Until then, for J.C. Cain, I'm Jim Engster. Stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.